The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 2nd of April, 2020. On the podcast today, Chris Bailey talks about the banks, EasyJet, Hays, that's recruitment, the AA. We also briefly mention Auto Trader. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the top five most liked RNSs, too. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of both these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk. And if you do receive an RNS via the app, which is free to download, but priceless, and you like the contents of that RNS, hit that thumbs up button. And if it gets enough likes, then it gets featured in that top 10 list. And of course, I could be covering it on the podcast.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. You're right, Chris.
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, you know, survived March finally into April, and markets are the same.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Apart from that small challenge, things are good. Lockdown, obviously, moving into about its 10th day or so, isn't it? Something like that. I know, yeah, it's over for you, isn't it? You've got about 3 weeks or something.
Yes, yeah, no, 5 years ago I started. With the 12, day 11, I think, isn't it, of self-isolation? Yeah. And the deaths are going up in the UK. In fact, it's quite starkly. I don't know if you saw America's yesterday, and I track these every day, America's just the biggest one-day fatality rate of any country. Of course, total, they're behind Italy and Spain, but they've had a 1,049, and I see this as very important, not just obviously, you know, health wise, but they are the biggest economy in the world, and I think when that starts to plateau, come down, then I think we'll see a bounce in the markets. But then you have the financial fallout. Not already we're getting companies, like I said, COVID-19 is now the most popular subtitle in the RNSs, I think, in the mornings. But we've got a while of this. I mean, a long time yet. I mean, people just, we've got, I think I've seen people go from saying it's going to be a V-shape now, when they've seen all the unemployment figures come out, they're realizing it's going to be a U-shape, probably maybe even an L-shape, you know. So it's going to take a long while, isn't it? And if you look at any bear market or recession, they do take about a year to wash through, you know.
Yeah, no, all of that is absolutely true. I mean, I completely concur on the states. I think I think the president clearly did underplay it, and I think he's come much more on a more sensible message now. Mm. The states are clearly behind in the grim sort of sequence of these things, Western Europe and obviously Asia. So I think you're right. From an American capital market perspective, they will clearly be focusing a little bit more on the local market. Fair enough. I think, though, from a sort of a general international perspective, I think some of the numbers in Western Europe, and they are all terrible. Clearly, you know, every death is bad, etc., etc. But if you do look at the numbers in, let's say, Italy, more tentatively in Spain, and certainly not quite yet in the UK, there are some grounds for optimism that the lockdown measures and related are impacting. It's grim, it's horrible, but markets do look forward, and I think, you know, that there are some small hope elements there. Saying that, you're right, there's a long way to go. You're absolutely right that the reason why it's hard to bounce back straight away is because of solvency concerns and broader systemic concerns. And of course, a V-shaped recovery, even a V-shaped recovery, you've still got, if you think about a V, you've got that bit, you know, the bit on the graph as well, the output that you've lost as a consequence of the plunge, and obviously the sort of the lag nature of the rise back. So nothing is, unfortunately, without cost and without danger. The only better news I'd say in terms of duration is that we had the most rapid fall into a bear market that we've historically ever seen. You know, on some measures, 15 or 16 days from highs to lows, on broader measures, or 21, 22 days. So things do happen more quickly nowadays. You know, back in the era of the Great Depression in the 30s, you know, crash was 29. The trough, you would probably argue, was 32, 33. You're absolutely right. In the global financial crisis, the crash sort of happened 07, 08. And obviously the trough was more 08 going into 09. I think March 09 was the technical trough.
Chris, but isn't that the reflection of how the economics or the economy is turned down? Like, you know, with normal bear markets, no one really knows for a while until it starts. Like, it took, like I said, even 2008, it took like 2 years pretty much to get down from 2007 to 2009. With this one, they basically pull the plug on all the economies, on every business pretty much. So we know straight away, whoa, hang on a sec, and it dropped down off a cliff because most people said, we're going to get no earnings in the next quarter. There's really no revenue.
Yes.
So I suppose that's why it went on so fast. But now, those issues, like you say, can be compounded because I don't know if you saw the figures today, but they've had a million people register for universal credit in the UK. That's 10 times higher than normal period in 2 weeks, 10 times higher than normal. And in America, like I said, 3.28 million people registered last week, initial jobless claims. And that is 5 times more than the record they've ever had. So it's not just a bounce back. People think this is a snap back. It's like switching a light on and off. And I see it more like a dimmer switch where you dim it right down, bring it back up. But even when you bring it back up, maybe the bulb has changed and it's not as high a wattage as it was before, you know? So it'll take a while. Well,
Yeah, certainly your eyes are going to take time to adjust to the light, right? What we have seen is though, you know, absolutely unprecedented government intervention, central bank governments, etc. I mean, the numbers are simply staggering. So for another time, it's the consequences of that, be it future tax rises, be it future inflation or whatever else. That clearly is something to think about later on in the 2020s. Today, you've got to try and fill the gap. And that's all you can say, that at least, you know, with contrast, certainly to the Great Depression, and I would argue also to the global financial crisis, when policymakers kind of sat on their backsides for a while trying to work it out, governments have been much more rapid this time. You're right, though, it's unbelievably messy. For financial markets, it's all about, I think, from an investment perspective, your first question for anything has to be, is the company that I'm potentially investing in, are they solvent? Are they going to be a survivor over the next year or two? And, you know, that's your first filter, basically. If you've got concerns about that, then probably don't buy the shares or don't hold the shares.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's look at some independent, and that's the thing at the moment, isn't it? You've got to, it's if you're going to try and go for an early sort of punt, early investment, try and get the bottom here, you've got to make sure in this time that there's not a lot of debt there, because as you said, there's going to be a lot of issues. We've already had two companies sort of go through already, and they had debt problems pretty much. And this is where weak companies with weak balance sheets start to suffer, don't they? And they start to get taken out very early, you know?
Yeah, no, that's right. And the banks pull the plug, you know, it's the normal scheme of things. Now, of course, that's an interesting thing at the moment, because what we've been told, the government and the regulators have told the banks that you've got to be a bit more careful, you've got to be a bit more helpful in this, you know, deeply transitional period when we've got a lockdown. This morning, you know, you've seen that on credit cards, credit card providers have been told, look, for the next 3 months, basically don't hassle people, you know, allow people to maintain that level of debt and then worry about it after that period. And clearly that's trying to say, let's get over this deep lockdown period, and when we get to the other side, or maybe the other side, then maybe you can start making some decisions. The same as on overdraft. I mean, I think the figure quoted was about £500. Mm-hmm. So I mean, basically what it's saying is, look, you can allow an overdraft to rise to that level without due recourse. Now, you know, some people say, my goodness, that's nothing, you know, they should be giving more help. But, you know, this is all at the margin stuff. And I guess at a certain level, at a collective level, with all the other schemes and initiatives of use, it's better than nothing after all. Of course, what it does do is it puts the banks, whose business is, of course, let's face it, to lend you money, take your money in as depositors, lend it back out at decent rates of interest and make the spread. That's the broad business, you know. And where it falls down is when you have bad debts or people don't pay money back and stuff like that. So clearly, all of these initiatives are potentially problematic for the banks, above and beyond the fact that, you know, if you have a general bad debt cycle associated with a recession or depression, that ain't pretty either. Mm-hmm. And obviously, they've been pushed into to passing on their dividends. You know, to be honest, I personally think it wasn't a particularly difficult conversation. I know some people have got grumpy about it, income investors and whatever, but here's the reality. Banks should be trying to keep as much capital as possible at the moment, because unsurprisingly, any recessionary scenario or anything like that is typically not very good for them. They are geared plays on all of this. So yeah. Personally, I think, you know, the quid pro quo for passing on the dividends was that the government would be there if they needed it, as we obviously saw in the global financial crisis. So,
yeah, well, you know what? Shares, yeah. Chris, you know what the funny thing is that, yeah, it's a lot of people knocking banks, saying, listen, banks don't care. They, you know, a lot of small businesses are saying at the moment they won't qualify, they're not viable for this emergency loan. And first of all, a loan is hard work for businesses that are struggling anyway. So, but then not to be eligible for it is annoying. Because the banks are, you know, that 20% they have to stand behind, the government standing behind 80%, that 20% they have to stand behind, they have to still go through the normal process of a bank for loaning it money, and that's the stumbling block there. But like I said, 2008, everyone said it was about the banks, and now everyone said it's not about the banks here. No, but it is about the banks, because if everything else falls over, the banks will fall over too, because like I said, most of these companies, you know, the buck stops with the bank, doesn't it? They've got loans, they've got debt, they've got mortgages, it stops, so the banks still have to be careful. They're going to just go crazy, because if all businesses fall over, the banks will too, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would actually extend the circle further. And this is where it gets sort of interesting and political and strategic, because you're coming back to this whole systemic argument. Because, of course, if the banks get into trouble, then you don't have your ability to conjure up any form of recovery is null and void. And we saw that much more overtly at the time of the global financial crisis, right, where Lloyds and RBS, among others, had to receive significant material government assistance to tide them over into, you know, a more normal trading pattern a few years later. And, you know, this is a different crisis, because this is not directly a financial-led one like the global financial crisis was. It's an exogenous shock. Government stepped in. The banks actually play an important role in keeping the system going, as you say. You know, for any product, any payment, you know, product or anything, it's at the core of the economy. You can't operate an economy without it. It's the essential plumbing, effectively. So I think, for me, when I read about the dividends being forced to be passed, I thought to myself, look, sure, as an investor, I mean, I've got some banking shares, Barclays and Lloyds and whatever. What would I like some dividends? Of course I would like some dividends. However, the reality is there's a bigger game at work here. And the banks know that if things are out of their control, then they're going to need the government to help them out, to tide them over, because, you know, both need each other, effectively. So, you know, banking investment here, banking share investment, it's highly risky, clearly. These are geared plays on everything. But all you can say is that having gone through the GFC, they are better prepared. And because the crisis isn't initially at least centred on them, you're absolutely right, it does impact them. Clearly, they're at the heart of it over time. There are different angles and different ways out. So, for me, high-risk investment, but if you believe that there is a way out of this, clearly geared into that, no doubt about that.
Yeah, cool. All right, so any companies you've specifically been looking at with news
out? We've got to talk about two companies, I think, in particular. A quick one on EasyJet, who've, you may recall a couple of days ago, there was the most amazing letter, which he sort of leaked to the press from Stelios. You may recall Stelios, he was the founder of EasyJet, you know, affable Greek guy who made, you know, over $1 billion and has taken dividends or whatever else, still owns 30-something% of EasyJet, and is no longer on a day-to-day basis associated with the company, but of course, as the biggest shareholder, there's an influence and an interest and a concern. He's given the chair of the board a massive nudge a couple of days ago, saying, look guys, it's time to be honest about a lot of things, including you've got to scrap this massive order of Airbus planes that you've got over the next 5 or so years, because you can't afford it, you don't need it, and you know that there's much better ways to put the company on a on an even footing. And he said, if you don't give me answers or a strategy or whatever else, then I'm going to, as the biggest shareholder, call extraordinary general meetings and basically put up for re-election one member of the non-executive team at a time. And he hasn't obviously got the response in a suitably quick manner in 48 hours. So you've got those first one of those general meeting sort of notifications out today, which it's all a bit of fun at some level, but there's a serious point to it, which is big shareholders, correctly, you know, absolutely correctly, are throwing their weight around at this stress time. And an airline is a super stressed business at the moment for all the obvious reasons you can see. I think EasyJet is one of the better run ones, certainly one of the better balance sheets, one of the better strategies. But, you know, if people aren't flying to Spain and Greece and wherever else, you know, it clearly is not a meme. They obviously put all of their fleet, grounded all of their fleet a few days ago. So lots of good questions. This is what you want to see. If I was a shareholder of EasyJet, I would want Stelios to be throwing his weight around, because he at least has a vested interest. You know, he's aligned with you. He also wants the share to go up. He also wants them over time to pay dividends and be a success and everything else. So good to see it. Unusual, certainly, but he's an unusual guy. But shareholder democracy, all for it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what he's saying. He's basically saying that they can't afford to buy these planes and he's got to put them on hold or something. Is that what
he's... Yeah, precisely. He said, look, you've got a sort of an order book out for the next 5 or so years. Oh,
4.5 billion, he says.
Yeah, 4.5 billion. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And so what you've got to do is you've got to cancel them. You know, you've grounded the fleet. You know, you've got planes. Sure, you might need one or two or few at the margin, but you don't need that many. You don't have that, those expansion plans you drew up a year or two ago, they're null and void now. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of sort of common sense in that. My observation is cancellations in the airline industry, it is just par for the course. I remember back in the early 2000s when you had that big sort of post.com crash and everything else, you had plenty of airlines curbing their order books with the knock-on impact on the Airbuses and the Rolls-Royces and whatever else. So it happens. You know, it's a long-term industry in theory, because a plane can be in the air for obviously for a number of decades in theory. But as a consequence, you know, people do make short-term decisions on long-term projects, and that's just the way it is. So for me, no great surprise. Stelios says they should claim force majeure, which is sort of the legal way of saying something big has happened out of our control, mm-hmm. aka the coronavirus. And I think, frankly, he's got a good point.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I say, big shareholders, this is what you, if you're a small shareholder, you want the big shareholders who naturally are going to have more sway and everything else. You want them to stir the pot broadly in favour of medium-term shareholder value. And my feeling is Stelios, he's doing that, and good on him.
Yeah, well, let's be honest. At the moment, I say, no one knows how long it'll take to recover. You know, this kind of thing. In fact, what they're doing here, if you cancel an order like that, that impacts another company. Now, that kind of contagion is going to happen. So we don't know. You know, so you're better off playing it safe and not, you know, spending that money. And you've got to hold cash now. You've got to be very careful. You've got to batten down the hatches. You've got to do everything you can in your power to make sure you get to the end of this crisis and you're still strong enough to thrive and survive, you know? So I think he's absolutely right. You've got to play it on the safe side, you know, because things have changed. You know, the picture's changed completely, hasn't it? So you've got to be adapt, and that's what he's trying to do. But I agree with him, actually. And you mentioned another company, didn't you? That's playing a bit safe at the moment.
Yeah, that's right, and that's Hayes. I mean, I'm no great fan of the staffing and recruitment sector, and it doesn't take a genius to work out that unless you're supplying workers for the healthcare system or for food or for supermarkets, you know, it's not easy business at the moment at all. Sadly, as we've already identified, unemployment's coming up. It's not the people who are recruiting loads. So Hayes, obviously a well-known name in the sector, interesting announcement today. They basically said, look, they pulled the guidance, they pulled the dividend, all the usual sort of stuff. But they said two things of real interest, I thought. They said, number one, we're a net cash company. Number two, we've got a management team who have been through the global financial crisis. And number three, we're going to raise 200 million quid in order to shore up our balance sheet even more. So this is a company undoubtedly impacted because of what they do, but coming from a net cash position at this moment in time, who have decided to raise, you know, and not you know, unsubstantial sum of money, sort of 10-12% of the shareholder base, shareholder capital base, in order to make sure that they survive. And I thought to myself when I was reading it, I thought initially, oh, you know, what are they doing? But then I thought, hang on, you know, they've actually panicked early. You know, they've said, look, we don't mind taking a little bit dilution here. Management are also subscribing for a few shares as well, which is a good sign. But they said, look, it's all about being a survivor. We've seen the GFC. We've seen what it can do. We've modelled various scenarios where our fee income could fall, you know, 70% year on year and stuff like that. We've got to protect ourselves. And I have to say, grudgingly, good on them. You know, I don't hold the shares, but, you know, a look at the longer term share price chart, kind of fascinating, right? The shares fell back to about a quid about this moment in time, but they're down 8-10% today. But what's interesting is you pull out that chart over, like, you know, a century to date, the last 20 odd years or so, at the points of stress, you know, 2002-03, 2008-09, Brexit referendum time, even, or post-Brexit referendum, you know, broadly speaking, that kind of quid sub a pound sort of area was where the share troughed. So I have to say, you know, this is a different crisis that we've already discussed, but I tip my hat to the Hays management. They've panicked early, they've shored up the business, and assuming the money raising goes well, I assume it will, they've actually made sure that the business is sustainable under all but the most extreme scenarios where clearly many of their peers would have already gone under. So good. I'd say, actually, if I was a Hay shareholder, I'd say, well, management, you've stepped up here, you've actually given a plan and your reasons, and you're executing it. And I have to say, I haven't seen too many management teams of the bigger companies go into that sort of detail and rationale and everything else, so good on them.
Yeah. Listen, I say no one knows how long this is going to last, and you know, a lot of companies have got no revenue, and so it's unprecedented. Apart from a world war, where companies are literally shut off their system, and I think Auto Trader did the same, didn't they? Yesterday they did a placing yesterday. I think it was.
That's right. Well. Yes.
So I think it's a wise thing if you can get away quickly, because it's going to get harder, you know, to get raise some funds, especially without having a discount. So it's going to get harder and harder. So I think get it out the way, get it done now, and be cautious. I assume now other companies are looking at these companies thinking, oh, hang on, we need to do that. And all of a sudden you get you know, fatigue by people who, you know, there's only a certain amount of money out there, isn't there, to be raised, I suppose. But
That's right. And, you know, we're back to the banks again. You know, Hays acknowledged that they had, you know, quite significant banking facilities, and obviously that's another avenue open to them. Mm. But, you know, if everyone's trying to tap the banks, at some point the banks are going to say no, or the banks are going to need some extra regulatory assistance from the government or the regulator or something like that. So yeah, it's in a real crisis. If you think you're marginal, then the best rationale is always to panic early. Because as I say, you get it away, and you may have over panicked, but you're at least a survivor, and you know, you've given yourself a bit more headroom, like an insurance policy, effectively. That's the way to think about it. So yeah, as I said, quite impressed by Hays management today and their update. Not being a big fan of theirs historically for a bunch of reasons, but I've got to say, tip of the hat today to them. That was a good statement and a good rationale.
Yeah, marvellous, cool stuff. And do you know what? It's funny at the banks at the moment. Like you said, they are trying to hold on to cash. You know, I saw recently that they pulled a load of mortgages. You know, unless you have 40% now deposit, they won't offer you a mortgage. You can't get a mortgage with them, or through the brokers. And someone said, yes, because they're understaffed. And maybe partly because of that. But I do think now they realise, hang on, we've got a lot of potential loans going out to companies we don't really wouldn't give a loan to normally. And we need the cash, you know. So I think they're just trying to help it in. Cool.
Absolutely.
Anything else? Or someone mentioned the AA on Twitter. So you could even mention
AA.
I don't know if you know much about AA, do you?
Yeah, no. I mean, it falls, the AA falls into that grouping of you know, in theory, a utility style business. But, you know, if you look at their problems, you know, fourth emergency service and all of that stuff, if you look at their history over the last little while, all their problems are sourced from having too much debt.
Yeah.
And obviously, with too much debt, you're having to service it, it causes you issues and problems. And obviously, that's what's crushed the share over the last little while. And, you know, you look at, they had an update earlier this week, life wasn't too bad in the wider scheme of things. I mean, you still clearly see AA vans rolling around. There's a subscription element to the business, etc.
Yeah.
However, in terms of a broader investment rationale, it fits into all of those groupings where it's a call option, effectively. It's a call option on better times, on stability and everything else. And unfortunately, still too much debt or a high level of debt puts into that category. You know, anything which has debt doesn't actually matter so much whether it's cyclical or pseudo-defensive. As you say, with the largest ways of the economy under different pressures at the moment, it's all got a bit blurry. But yeah, it's tough. And, you know, do I have the position? Am I looking at it? The answer simply is no. You know, I think there are simpler, easier things to be doing.
Yeah, exactly. It's risky enough at the moment as it is without having extra risk of debt being laden there. Marvellous stuff. Anything else, Chris, at all?
No, I mean, we'll leave pets at home saying profits are going to be at the top end of expectations, maybe to another time. I mean, you know, it goes again to show the British love of animals has sort of driven not only a massive move into supermarkets to buy stuff up, but also into pets at home stores in order to get your hay and rabbit food and whatever else you need, dog food and whatever else.
They're
thinking that... just as we're feeding our families, obviously the pet is an extension of that, so they're benefiting from that as well. So positive statement from them, which is, you know, kind of good to see, I guess, at a certain level.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Chris, speaking next week.
Sounds a plan. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Eugene Health. That's Y-G-E-N, of course, 16 pence down 1.5%. At 4, Pathfinder Minerals, down 9.5% to 0.475 pence. PFP, ticker there. At 3, we briefly covered them with Chris there on the podcast, the AA Group, and it's down 5.7% to 15.1 pence. At 2, Gfinity, raised some money, of course, today, down 31% to 1.025 pence. And at 1, it's Czar Group, 26 pence, up 15.5%. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Hollywood Bowl. I always remember that advert years ago. And they stopped it. They changed the advert. I used to work on a radio station, and that advert used to come on all the time. Very catchy. Annoying. But they change it. They don't change it. That's perfect. It's an earworm. You know, it gets into your head. You can't get it out. Hollywood Bowl. Anyway, further actions in response to COVID-19. They said strong balance sheet and all that stuff, but of course they shut down. And I've never known anything like this ever, ever in my life, where so many businesses just shut down. No revenue. really odd one here. We've got a Bidstack price monitoring extension. RNS, people liking that. At 3, Blackbird. Arsenal Broadband Limited selects Blackbird. At 2, Tertiary Minerals, £600,000 placing. And number one, most liked RNS, quite a bullish release from, I think, United Oil and Gas. And that in conjunction with the oil price sort of jumping a little bit. I think President Trump, Donnie Trump there said he's going to have a chat with the oil companies in America. Some people say there could be some kind of help on the way. So oil is up, and of course he's trying to mitigate between Saudi and Russia. Has increased a little jump in the oil. What's the oil price at, actually? It's still not... it's, you know, it's Brent is $27, up 10% today. And WTI is up close to 10%, $22. Still low, though. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.